Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon. You're looking natty as usual.
Natty.
I'm looking nappy. You're looking nappy.
You are kind of looking nappy. But, you know, you have your signature cargo pants on.
Yes, I do.
CeCe Lathan, if you're listening, you must have done some impression on Paul because the man, I think, sleeps in these things
now. I do now. I'm determined to bring him back.
You're bringing back cargo pants.
That's right.
Okay.
You saw it here first.
So it's PR Paul Roberts instead of Justin Timberlake, JT, bringing cargo pants back.
I figure if you wear something long enough, it'll come back.
It's a reach. Actually, it's very true because I finally got myself into, I tend to be a contrarian a little bit, and maybe it's part of what we're going to do the show.
Yeah,
just a touch, yeah. That's right. You've known me for over a year now.
A little bit.
I can't get away with that anymore. But no, I would not do it when it was on the air.
Yes.
Now that it is not on the air, I will do it. I will watch Mad Men.
Oh, now you will.
Right.
Oh, I see.
And I've been like just completely binge watching Mad Men. Thank you, Netflix, for developing another addictive thing for us to do.
That's right. Great show.
Great show. And in fact, I even quoted Mr. Donald Draper at a conference as a speech I gave at a conference last week.
Wow.
Right. And the funny thing is, I noticed parallels, actually, with Mad Men and Fashion for Men right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of funny. So, yes, everything comes back, including, I don't know, maybe we're pushing it with the cargo pants.
Cargo pants?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, in OC Talk Radio Studios, the preferred attire for all those fashionistas out there.
That's right.
It's cargo pants.
That's right.
So
it's so practical. You have lots of pockets. You can stick lots of things in them. They're comfortable. They look like you're in combat here, and we're kind of – this is like a wartime radio here. We're broadcasting from the bunker.
And this part of the show is brought to you by Army Surplus.
That's right.
Okay. By the way, I'm dressed the way I am because I have to go do a headshot after the show at Community Senior Service.
I have to do a headshot.
Well – I'm actually very humbled and very touched. When I was in Vegas at this conference that I was at, it's your favorite topic after that massage in your chair, the spa industry conference. But I got notified that I actually was one of the finalists for the Senior Hero Award, Senior Care Hero Award.
Right.
And along with this show's scheduler and friend of the show, Deborah Pearson, is also. And then Freddie Dominguez, who's also been on the show, was on it. So I got marching orders yesterday to show up at Community Senior Serve because they need to take my mugshot and basically post it all over the screen when, I guess, the announcements happen at the show, at the gala.
And when is the gala?
The gala, I believe, I have to look it up.
Is it gala or gala? I don't ever know.
It's a gala gala.
I got it.
It's a gala gala.
We're all agog about the gala gala.
We're agog about the gala gala. It is in October, and it is, I'll tell you right now, I think it's the 15th. It's a Saturday in October, and it's at the Grove in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, I'm going to be there the week before for a Ronald McDonald event too. This is the Senior Care Heroes Awards Gala, and it is the sixth year that they've held this, and it will be Saturday, October 15th at 6 p.m. at the Grove in Anaheim. You can get your tickets at Senior Care Hero Singular Awards .org/buy-tickets.
Mm-hmm.
It's for a great cause. The money goes to Meals on Wheels. Last year's events had about 700 guests.
Is there going to be a Rod Brigade?
We might have to do it like a rat flash mob.
Yeah.
By the way, be afraid.
Be very afraid.
Be very afraid. It looks like I might be able to get a vanity phone number.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So I won't tell you what it is because I don't want everybody going over there and stealing it right now.
Okay.
So I have to go take a picture, and that's why I'm dressed all natty.
Okay.
Okay. So the other thing, too, is I wanted to just do a little bit of a full circle on the Heroes Awards. Okay? This thing again, I can't tell you more. I mean, my mom actually volunteered for Meals on Wheels. And
my aunt gets Meals on Wheels. That's what keeps her alive right now. Yeah.
So we want to just give a shout out to Susan Piperi and, again, to Freddie Dominguez for bringing her into the show. Thank you so much. We had a kind of a little preview. And appreciate and I'm very humbled to have been nominated and to have made the final list.
Meals on Wheels has to be the finest program nobody's ever heard of. They work very quietly. They don't get a lot of attention, and they serve a lot of people in need, like my aunt. My aunt can no longer drive. She can't get out. She lives by herself in a little apartment. How else would she stay alive? She can't afford to move into assisted living.
Right.
So she's stuck living by herself in a little apartment. Won't move in with me, doesn't want to do anything. She's very independent, very determined to stay where she is, but she can't go out and get groceries. She can't go out and get food. So what do you do? Ask neighbors endlessly to go buy you groceries so you can cook stuff?
Well, if you're fortunate enough to have a relationship with your neighbors, right? I mean, that's also not a very necessarily a common thing these days.
Yeah, she lives in an apartment complex. People come and go. So really, the only thing that keeps her alive, they do two things for her. One, they bring her food every day for free. For free, they bring you nice, nutritious meals, one meal a day, and they ask only if you can contribute and give some money. So I think she donates.
It's a donation.
Yeah, I think she donates $100 a month or something out of what little money she has just because she feels happy that they help her. But if you can't, they don't ask. They'll come and get you.
Well, and this is something that there's more and more need every year.
You don't know how many seniors are locked, are isolated, are stuck somewhere and can't get out.
Right.
Then, on top of it, truthfully, it's the only person she sees most of the week. I can come out on the weekend. She lives a couple hours away from here. We don't have any other family. She doesn't have any children or whatever. If not for that, nobody would even know she's alive or dead every day. So they come in, they talk, they hang out for a few minutes, and they bring her meal and make sure she's okay.
Well, and everybody whines about, you know, we need more of these kind of services. And then there's some other people go, no, you know, we need to focus on other stuff because this is not what's high priority. And this kind of dynamic, this kind of stuff that's going on is something that happens more and more at a time like we're going through right now, which is election season.
Think about it. She doesn't ask for a handout.
Right.
She's not begging for help. She's not asking for county support or anything else, some of which she could probably qualify for, truthfully. But she's very independent. She's from the World War II generation. I'm going to take care of myself. But she can't go out and buy food. She can't drive. Right. So, but for this, I don't know how she'd stay alive.
Well, and where I want to go with the show today is, again, these changes that this is an example of. Yeah. That we have a population that is aging, right? That the life expectancy is higher. Medium age of people in countries is rising, in communities is rising. We happen to live in a part of Orange County and further south that you go that's even more of this situation, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, the geriatric population is estimated to reach 2 billion by 2050.
And so what else? What other alternatives? We could either just let her die, starve to death in her own house here. We could, you say, well,
obviously,
some relatives got it. Yeah, a little dramatic, but
somebody
else got to take her. Who? She doesn't have any family. I'm it. I live in a two-story house. She can't walk up and down the stairs, so she'd have to sleep on the couch downstairs.
Right.
That wouldn't be easy. She would feel imposing upon us. This way she gets to have her own life. She gets to feel independent, as she's always been. And she, for the cost of, it doesn't even cost anything. The volunteers bring the food out. I don't know what kind, they get kind of some subsidy, I think, from the state or the federal government for the food program. So I'm not sure exactly how that works. But,
they also get a lot of donations from different people.
For the cost of a meal
corporate partners.
And a volunteer driving it out there, you want to be ugly and practical, we're keeping her out of public assistance. We're keeping her out of public housing, public.
So what other things? Okay, and this is sort of the thing. It's more of a policy, I guess, focus that I want to do or explore today.
Mm-hmm.
Is we're in the middle of an election season. We're making decisions of who to put into positions of decision making in these different communities, whether municipalities or even on the national level.
Right.
Okay. And we've talked a little bit about the fact how on the national arena it's kind of funny. This is probably the last election that we will have people from the 50s generation
that
will basically be running. That now it's going to be it'll be people that are baby boomers. Literally,
it'll be more your generation, the generation X, right?
Gen Xers that will be running. So How does that all factor in how we move forward? Because I actually just finished writing a little write-up in the San Clemente Times and submitted it today about how we seemingly forget when we're in the midst of the fervor of these election cycles that at some point or the other, that very fought-for seat, if you're sitting in it or you're standing beside it, mm-hmm. okay, if you spent all this time basically mudslinging and undermining your opponent, and the whole point was to win that seat,
right?
Now you've won
at any cost.
Now you've won the seat,
right?
Okay.
Now you got to do something.
Now what do you do? Right. What happens day one after you basically now have to do the work, right? Yeah. Which unfortunately, and Congress is the biggest example of this. Okay, unfortunately. People seem to, in political office, seem to have forgotten that they're there to do the work.
Yeah. Well, no, what they do is they start fundraising already for
right.
the next one.
So you're not supposed to just get in the seat, and then basically the minute that election is over, all you're doing is focusing on fundraising for the next one to hold the seat.
Right.
Right? That's called, what, staying at the top of the mountain? I mean, that's
perpetual
employment. That is not what you're there to do. You're supposed to do the work. So, having said that...
And I'll back up. I'll interject one other thing. We had a public policy show for some time here at the City Square, and they've talked about this numerous times, not so much lately. But Jerry Amante, who was the original host of it, and former mayor of Tustin here, used to say, you know, you got to somehow pivot to doing the job. And how do you, if the election between you and I are running for seat, we get along, we're great pals, but all of a sudden during the election, I find out a little something, but I think maybe that'll help me, and I put it out, and you get pretty incensed. You're like, really, Paul, you're going to go there? Well, then I'm going to go here. Pretty soon we hate each other. Pretty soon we have created such animosity between us. One of us is going to win. Now, how are we going to serve with that person? How
exactly.
are we going to work with
That's
that
my
person?
Whole point. You know, it's really funny because I think we as a society, forget even this just the election cycle, okay? We have this thing where we're basically I'm being notified that actually I've got somebody who will be calling in that is actually perfect to guide us through this because they have been sitting in one capacity in the educational sort of decision making oversight and they're seeking a higher office in a different level now. So it actually we can touch on a couple of things. But I won't ruin the surprise who it's gonna be. But here's the thing. I think we as a society cultivate culturally, the acquisition of that brass ring, and not what we do with it afterwards.
Can I give you an interesting aside story?
Yeah, it's a person running on the Republican side called Donald Trump, who basically it's about getting into the White House. But what the heck is he going to do after that? Because I haven't heard one word about policy.
Have you?
Well, I haven't heard.
I don't
from
know
Hillary
if you saw
yet.
The who's the famous. Big heavy set filmmaker on the left, Michael.
Why am I blanking? Michael Moore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know everybody's cringing right now. If you're on the right, you say Mike, they hate Michael Moore, all the documentaries he's done, and all this stuff, and he's kind of a firebrand liberal. Having said that, so discount this if you want, but he because he's involved in the entertainment industry, making movies, documentaries, and he says he has some connections at NBC, he claimed in a very highly publicized, I don't know if it was a blog or an interview or whatever he did, that, he said, I can't tell you how, this is back to this again, I can't tell you how, but I know for a fact Donald Trump never expected it to go this far. He confided in others that this was really kind of a way to raise his brand. He was in renegotiation with NBC for The Apprentice at the time. And he thought, you know, I'm going to show NBC how much the world loves me, how much they admire me. I'm going to run for president, and I'll make a good showing, and then I'll bow out somewhere along the way, and this will just elevate me on the public stage. Lo and behold, he won the nomination. And the theory is that now, oh, somebody's calling here.
Okay.
The theory is that, hang on, I'll get the phone call here. Hang on one second. The theory is that he almost wishes it would go away because he doesn't want to serve for the next 4 years. He's going to take time off from all his business. He's going to stop building golf courses and doing all the things he's done.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will repeat one more time, okay? I am a product of business school in the 80s, in the late 80s.
Famous business schools.
Okay. All you need to know about Donald Trump, he told you in Art of the Deal, go pick up the book. It's all about closing the deal. I will say whatever it takes. I will negotiate and get in bed with whoever I need to close the deal.
Right.
The question, what we're talking about here, is what happens after you close the deal? Okay, what happens when you win that election seat? What happens when you basically have done so in the process of which you have tried to decimate other people that you now will probably have to work with?
Yes. How is he going to get anything? And think about this.
At the very least, in a transitionary manner, they're sitting in that seat, and they basically have to transition and have a legacy continuation.
The guy that you besmirched and said wasn't even born in this country is going to somehow help you give you advice as he hands over the keys to the White House to you here.
So the point is this, okay? Things change, okay? In our particular focus on this show, things get older. People, populations get older. Demographics change. The things that are of interest change over time, right? We talked about this with Paul the other day where he was a firebrand, do everything, take risks, and now he's a grandfather and his risk ratio
is risk averse, right?
So one of the things that I really think doesn't get covered, and specifically in a county like ours which has an aging population, is the topic of education.
Mm.
Okay? It's almost the same as the topic
education,
of
education. That's just for the young. That's not for the old.
That's exactly one of the things I want to talk about. The other thing is we have an aging population. So in certain communities that are now aging and people are staying in their homes and there's no transference or increase in tax from property because there's no transactions going on unless somebody has reassessed their house.
Right.
Okay. Excuse me. The tax base, the funding for things that traditionally used to get funded by higher property taxes is now in a stagnant situation.
Frozen if nobody moves.
Okay. The young are leaving because they can't afford to live there.
Mm-hmm.
There's not even affordable housing if you have even housing, right? So
what's the problem?
We now have
I got mine.
I got mine. Not in my backyard.
Yeah.
We're talking about. Okay,
what's
the problem? But let's talk about the reality of this. What happens to the school districts? I'm setting it up. I know who is on the line.
Okay.
What happens to those school districts? Okay. What happens to how you now need to fund for refurbishment of existing facilities when you have an actual student population in decline because the young who are starting families are leaving? You got a more older population. What happens? How do we basically adjust in our policy position? How do we focus our education?
Who could we possibly ask to address this?
Who could we possibly ask this question?
Do we have a caller on the phone? We have a caller on the phone. Welcome, caller. You calling into the Rad Life?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my God. I know who this is, but I will let him introduce himself. Who are you, caller?
Mystery caller.
I guess I'm caller number one.
Yes,
you are caller number one. Don't be coy with me. That's John Alpe, current board trustee, board member on Capistrano Unified School District, who's also seeking a different elected position off, John?
For the South Orange County Community College District Board of Trustees. So I'm going to move from one board to another.
We're gonna look at the people are applauding already.
Really? You got an applause for John?
Just for John.
I've been sitting across the table from this guy for over a year and a half. He never applauded anything I said.
Spontaneous applause just burst out of the room here.
You are such a kiss-ass. Okay. So here's I don't know if you've been listening, how long you've been listening, John, but here's really the question, right? And it comes down to this for me. We got to change population. Let's be just very practical. You got older people living in areas that have school districts. Now, I know you've served, I think, twice, two terms, right, on the school district in Capistrano? Okay. So that's one of the – I mean, tell us a little bit about the size and scale of that school district, John, for people who don't know.
Well, Capistrano Unified is a rather large district, both in terms of population, voter population, student population, as well as geography. It's depending on the time of day – the 8th or 10th largest school district in the state of California.
Wow.
Currently a hair under 50,000 students, about 200 square miles, and 220,000 registered voters.
What kind of budget do you guys have on your annual budget?
Well, it varies from year to year and depends on the good graces of our elected leaders in Sacramento, but we're around $400 million.
Okay, take a minute because
$100 million just for the school district.
$100 million.
$400 million.
Okay, so take a minute because I think a lot of people for whatever their own personal agendas might be or their misunderstandings are, me included. I did not really know this until I dug into it. But would you explain to people how exactly school districts actually get funded? Hmm. Because most people believe that everything that comes out of particular communities as far as money from taxes or
stays
school
there.
Fees goes into the school district. Would you explain to people how that happens? Because I know that's not true.
Well, I wish it were true. It would certainly make lives in education that much easier. But the short answer is all the money that collected from property tax-related education goes to Sacramento, and then they parcel it back out from there. So, for example, on average, I believe it's 44 cents of every dollar collected goes towards education. But with respect to Capistrano Unified, you're looking around 39 cents actually being spent in the community here.
Out of every dollar collected from property tax.
And explain this to me, because we've had we've done this show, The City Square, for a long time, this public policy show at the Association of California Cities, Orange County. It's currently on hiatus, but they've been doing it for a long time. And one of the things that came out of that show, which I never knew, I live in your district. I live in Capistrano Unified School District, sent my daughter to Tesoro High School. She's got a great education down there. What I didn't realize is that as a county, we're considered a donor county, which is to say we give more than we get in our taxes. There are other counties that get more than they give. Explain how that was determined and how that works, why it works.
Well, you know, it's a very convoluted system, and it defies any form of logic. And the governor and the legislature has recently changed it such that funding is based a certain level, and additional funding is given based on concentration. So if you have a certain population that's English language learner, you exceed that threshold, you get additional funding.
For just to help that program, ESL or whatever.
That is correct. Right. Correct. So, for example, they have a huge EL, which is English language population. Santa Ana has a huge concentration of it, so they get additional funding. About 20% of the students in Capistrano Unified are English language, but it doesn't exceed that threshold, so we don't get additional funding for that.
So a lot of your funding sources and your opportunities or limitations are really driven by what the state.
The priorities they set at the state.
Correct. And it goes back to formulas that were determined back in the 70s, and it's just exacerbated over time. The differences have gotten larger with inflation and adjustment.
What was the logic?
So there's huge neck.
What was the logic behind some counties? We all go into a common pool. Okay, I might accept that. I mean, I understand the idea of it'd be better.
What determined the actual
distribution. How did some kind? It's my understanding that the agricultural counties, the rural counties, get more than they contribute. Obviously, they don't have enough people to support, so they get extra money. And the highly dense urban populations end up contributing more than they get back. Is that an overstatement, or is that fair?
You know, I'm not an expert in this because it's so convoluted, but my understanding is, for example, San Francisco Unified gets more funding from the state than it contributes to the state. So, again, these are funding formulas that have been adjusted over time and long since lost their logic. Just to give you some flavor, Laguna Beach, the average student gets about funding per student is about $16,000 per student. Capistrano Unified is about half that.
Wow. So is it just down to who fights the hardest for the funds and who has the most effective political lobbyists?
Well, it's inertia more than anything else. Why change anything? I mean, if you're getting a big chunk of change. Why are you going to change it? You're going to fight to maintain that. So it's easier to maintain the status quo than actually change it. Even the governor, when he went to a local funding formula, didn't change the actual dollars that were coming to each school district.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a minute as well. Let's talk about the impact of that. Okay, so that, I can imagine, would be a real problem in communities where you have more and more student population. Because
more lead, because more need, less dollars.
And those old formulas could really become a hindrance. What happens in communities where you have a reduction in student population? Are we experiencing that anywhere in Orange County?
Well, let's say Capistrano Unified, for example. When I first joined the board, we had a student population of about 53,000. We're now down closer to about 48. It's just, you know, demographics are changing, and certain portions of our district get more so large. They're experiencing declining population as their children grow up and people age in place, so forth and so on. Other areas that are growing tremendously, we have new schools and we can't build them fast enough, or we have huge bubbles coming through. But I guess at the end of the day, you got to remember our funding is based on student population. So if we have 10 heads, we get X number of dollars times 10.
Well, you just, by your own numbers, you just lost 10% of your population, right?
Well, yes.
So what are these schools that you're referring to that are you can't build fast enough?
What areas?
Oh, you're talking about Rancho Mission Viejo. I mean, they're building new homes out there. They're growing, for example. And so we're looking at building 3 or 4 new schools over the next 20 years. You look at older areas that have become more established, like Talega. We
right.
built a school there. We built a new high school to accommodate that population growth.
John, I was going to say that. So basically, it's not so much that your population has increased; it's just where it is located has shifted. And so the facilities that you have might.
New development. If we didn't have new development or growth, we would be experiencing significantly more. Decline in population. Our older established areas are experiencing a decline in student population.
Fewer kids, more old. So is this old guys like me staying in place?
So is this to a certain extent a normal cycle?
It's cyclical. I mean, these schools that are experiencing declining enrollment. I mean, they may have 500 or 600 students now. At one point in time, they were 1,200, 1,300. It's just the nature of the beast. It comes and goes.
So how do you decide? I'm sure you deal with this every single month. How do you decide where the funding goes? If you have old facilities in a neighborhood, an area that basically is having a more severe impact of decline in student population, but yet the facilities need upgrading, the facilities need assistance. How do you determine what your priorities are?
Well, I mean. We try to provide equity for all our students, and they have the same access to the same kind of facilities. But as the population declines, you're eventually going to reach a point where you're going to have to start closing schools. And in the last 6 years, we've actually closed 2 schools and since turned them over to charter schools, so they're run as independent campuses right now. But we've actually closed schools, one in Laguna Niguel, the other being in Mission Viejo. I know Saddleback Valley, our school district to the north, has closed few more schools as they're experiencing a larger decline in population.
So help me understand this, because I'm one of those guys that doesn't have a real clear understanding between charter schools and public schools. Okay, I did not go to either one. I went to public.
You don't
private,
listen to our OC Talk Radio enough. We do these all the time.
I went to private schools. But oh my God, another set of cargo pants.
Yeah,
okay,
I knew how to dress.
Sit down. Yeah, I have a guest that he's actually a friend who just happened to be passing by, so he's sitting in. It's almost like a Mr. Rogers neighborhood here today.
People dropping in.
People knock on the doors. But no, John. So when you have charter schools, you're telling me that you're closing down schools and you're turning them over to charter schools. So if the demand is lower, how does the charter school is a more viable answer, or why? What makes you actually approve those charter schools going to those facilities?
Well, you got to remember, this is something of a different animal with respect to the population. We serve our students that reside within our attendance boundaries. There are certain situations where we take students from outside our area, but those are going to be small numbers. Charter schools, they get our charter from us, and they're obviously going to serve our students. But they're also allowed to take students from outside our district. So when a charter school opens up within our district, they can have a huge waiting list of a couple hundred students, but they may not necessarily be all students from within our district.
And
they can be the districts next door.
And so the draw would be basically their programming and how they're basically delivering on the educational
program. For example, there was a charter school in, I think it's in Capo, but maybe I'm wrong. If you can enlighten me on this, that where it was about the children were immersed in Chinese.
Oh, Mandarin immersion?
Yeah.
Oh, I think he could probably tell you a few things about that.
And so there were a number of people outside of the district, wherever the school is located, who obviously wanted to send their children there either because they were Chinese and they wanted them to learn their original language, or because they thought this was the language of the future and they wanted their children to have some exposure to it and understanding of it.
John, I think you had a lot to do with that, didn't you, getting that Mandarin immersion program started?
Well, this is one of the things I'm most proud of my time on the board. I worked with the community and a group of parents, and we actually formed this Mandarin immersion program. It's technically not a charter program. It's a program started by the school district itself. And it's currently in place at Marion Bergeson Elementary School. And next year we'll be enrolling for the first time the program at the middle school level as those children grow up. That's technically not a charter school, so it's a different program.
But wasn't there a charter school?
Was there a charter school?
Isn't there somewhere in Orange County? I thought there was a charter school for Mandarin immersion, the program like that, or something like that. Am I wrong?
Well, there may very well be, but it's not with the Capistrano Unified. Okay. I mean, we have, I believe, five charter schools within Capistrano Unified.
So what would be, you know, the hard-learned lessons? I'm going to put you on the spot. I know you well enough. I'm going to put you on the spot. What are the hard-learned lessons of being of service at that in that capacity in the educational arena for, 8 years?
6 years now.
6 years, yeah.
It only felt like 8 years.
Yeah. I've known him.
It's a lot more.
In dog years or in board years, right?
In board years, it's like 12, right?
Yeah.
That's very good. I like that. I'll start using that.
Board years, right.
In real time, I was there 6 years. In board years, I was there for 12.
So what is the take? I mean, you know, sometimes we forget to ask people, okay, you remember the days when you didn't really, you were kind of like that person that was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and going into that scene.
Idealistic.
Now looking back 6 years, what can you share?
Well, I mean, I guess there are two takeaways. I mean, people are very passionate about the education of their children, and rightfully so. I mean,
sure.
The thing they value most is their children. And so they're going to be very passionate, they're going to be very strong-willed about it, and they're going to share their feelings with you, and sometimes the filters are not necessarily applied in those situations.
Well, I'll say, that's a subtle way of saying it. Can I ask you the tough question?
Very diplomatic.
A question you probably don't want to answer, but I got to ask it. What has been the dysfunction in that school district? For those who live outside of it, I have never seen more animosity, more acrimonious.
Well, and you live in that district.
I do live in it.
So, yeah.
How many recalls has there been? There was one board that was recalled, and then they didn't do what the public wanted, and another group came up and recalled them, and there was even a documentary made about this. And I mean, this has been a very angry situation there for some time. I don't know if it still is.
Well, I think this goes back to reputation. You know, it takes 15 years to build it, 15 seconds to lose it.
Yeah.
I was elected on the board in the third and final recall back in 2010. And we haven't had any recalls since then. I think where our focus has been on the classroom and education, and we've done a very good job with that. I mean, not to say there hasn't been issues, but they've been educated related.
Right.
For my first year and a half, 2 years in office, I measured my success by how infrequently I was referenced in the Orange County Register. Because when we first got in, we were still listed, you know, almost on a daily basis and all the dysfunction.
Yeah.
Well, eventually that went away. The reporters stopped going away, and you don't read about us in the newspaper.
No, that's true. I haven't.
So I think we've done a great job, and I think our focus is on where it should be, on the students in the classroom, and right, good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, the reputation from the days of old still persists.
So without, and I know this is probably sensitive to say, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So what do you think was at the basis of it? Was it just, and I'll give you three choices, or maybe there's more. One was wildly different views of what the school district should be doing. You guys are doing it wrong. We got to do it better. And we're going to passionately go and improve our point here. Or, as some people said, no, it was just a minority of people who, for whatever reason, personal agendas, want to do something and advance their
well,
own
how much? How
I mean, was it ideologically driven? Was it personality driven? What was the cause of it? Because you mentioned they went through three recalls in one.
I'm going to let him answer. Go ahead, John, answer it. I got a couple of jaded comments on this.
Well, I'm going to take the fifth on this one to a certain extent, just because I didn't move to South Orange County until 2008, so I sort of moved in the middle of it all.
Right.
You know, before then, I mean, for years on end, there were no elections at Capistrano Unified because it was the incumbent, and nobody else ran against them. So
right.
There was no change. It was the same people. And all of a sudden, there was a realization, hey, this is the largest governmental agency indigenous to South Orange County. And, you know, $400 million dwarfs any city budget. I mean, you know, there are seven cities that we serve, you know, the HOAs have more power than the city council in some respect.
Paul, you're asking about reasons why?
Mm-hmm.
I got 400 million reasons for you. I mean, can you imagine the power, influence, and the management of that kind of a budget? I mean, people get kind of a little bit, I think, yes, it is. I think a lot of people are well-intentioned, and the interest is in, you know, ensuring the best quality education for their kids, and rightfully so. But it's what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, okay? These people, there's a lot of people, you know, John included, when, you know, sorry, John, when you guys were running, you know, when you were first running, I think a lot of people focus on getting into the seat.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we sometimes, a lot of us forget, because culturally I think that's how we're programmed. It's the getting of the brass ring, not what you do with it once you have it, right? Do you put it on the mantle? Do you polish it? Does it become a halo on your head? Do you just, you know, start serving food on top of it? What do you do with that brass ring once you get it, right? What do you do with that seat, elected seat, once you get it? If your intention is only to just get into the seat and hold it and fundraise to keep it, then that is not the right person that you should be. We should be elected.
Or I'll give you another alternative, and they've talked about this before. I think this was some of it. It happens in rebellions. You know, I don't know what I'm for, but I know what I'm against. And we got to throw the bums out. We got to overthrow the establishment. We got to rebel, and hooray, they're gone. Now what?
Right, but here's the irony of all ironies. Here's the thing that is almost Mel Brooks funny, mm-hmm. okay, is that when you see the person who basically rebelled mm-hmm. to get the establishment out, right? I mean, it's a classic revolution formula, right? The person who's in power, there are people that are uprising against that person.
Throw them out.
They got them out. They sit in that throne seat, which now they call a director's chair, and then eventually it becomes a throne seat again.
Yeah.
Because the bottom line is the system has certain realities that you have to work in if you are, in fact, going to do your job. So when you are trying to seek the chair, you are this firebrand maverick.
Right.
And when you sit in the chair,
you're establishment.
Oops, I'm establishment. And it kind of, I think for a lot of people, it just kind of sneaks up on them. One day they're like, oh my God, I'm establishment. I have to compromise. I actually have to work with people.
Yeah.
And that's the sad thing, because in the core, that is why a lot of people stay away from civic service.
And I think that's what happened. There was a group that I know very little about this other than
it's
what I read in the register.
It's that ugliness that happens along the way.
There was real anger, and probably, maybe rightly so, there were people who had been in there forever, and it's like, let's change things up, let's shake things up. And then that group came in and didn't do what they had promised.
Right.
Radical change didn't happen, like they said. And another group came up and said, well, they've been co-opted. These bums, they're as bad as the first group. Throw them out. And it went through, like as you said, like three incarnations of this before it settled
down. And once that becomes the tone of the election, I believe, in a particular district or in a particular environment, that becomes the go-to mode.
Right.
Every single election
cycle. Throw the bums out.
The reality and the accomplishments are secondary to the fervor of that game that we're going to play every 4 or 6 or 8 years.
Or the reality of the challenges faced by the district. So you mentioned one, and I think that's the point of today's show here. How are districts going to adapt to this aging Orange County? Are we just going to quietly keep shutting down schools as we don't need
them? Are we going to educate the same way? Is the population focus going to be the same?
Are people still going to pass school bonds when it's been 30 years since my kids went to school?
Well, let me put it to you a different way in terms of facilities, but put it in terms of educational offering. I mean, given recent changes in the law, Capistrano Unified is transitioning adult education over to the community college district.
Hmm.
So I think you're going to see an emphasis more on the community college level as opposed to the K-12 level, given community colleges will be taking over the adult education. In addition, for those that are seniors, so they have the Emeritus Institute, where seniors could take courses at no cost at the community college level and keep their minds active and engaged and involved.
Well, and also as people reinvent themselves at that point in their life and basically maybe seek other skill sets because they're not ready to just, you know, go sit on the bench and wait for God's bus to come pick them up, right? They may be actually looking for certain skill sets that technically would have been for transitional career paths or things like that, but now it's a senior population.
I just missed God's bus as I was illegally jaywalking across the street here, but God's bus almost hit me and picked me up.
Okay, you can't do that. We need to put out the show every Wednesday, okay?
So, you know, you said something, and I think that's brilliant, and I think it's so obvious that none of us see it. Education is going to change. I already see it. We've had several people in here from Saddleback and others, including the whatever he calls himself, whoever's the dean or the main guy at Saddleback. We had the main guy from
Chancellor,
Dr. Glenn, somebody from Irvine.
Oh,
community.
Yeah, from Irvine Valley College.
Yeah, the Doc Rock Dr. or something. He's a professor of geology over there, and they're seeing explosive growth in the community college level for two reasons. One, college has become so expensive that kids, more and more kids, are spending their first 2 years at local and stay home, and then transferring up to the four-year university. And two, what you're alluding to, the baby boomers aren't done. We're suddenly rediscovering education in our latter years here, either to enlighten us, enrich us, or to change gears. So maybe that's it.
Well,
maybe.
and you're seeking office where you basically may be more instrumental in that kind of stuff, John. Right? I mean, where would that transition be more part of that?
Well, that's what I'm hoping to see. Right now, collaboration between the community colleges and the K-12s, at least my perspective, it's sort of a no man's land. I go to these events and I don't see much participation or cooperation.
Interesting.
Todd Burnett, who just announced he's stepping down as president of Saddleback College at the end of this
That's who we had on here.
Well, no, you actually had Dr. Was it Todd or was it Glenn?
Well, we had Todd on one of the shows just for on the City Square. He was just interviewed for a few minutes. We did an event where the South County Economic Council holds a big powwow there, and we got him to talk for a few minutes in one of our shows.
Okay. Well,
but we did have Glenn on, too. Yeah, right.
Well, Todd has done a great job of partnerships with Capistrano Unified. Capistrano Unified and Saddleback College have done articulation agreements. So you take a sequence of classes that will lead you to coursework at Saddleback College, allow you to get a degree or complete your associate's degree or a certificate that much quicker, getting people into the workforce, earning a salary, paying taxes, so forth and so on. So they're not caught in the pipeline, if you will, taking that much longer to get an education.
Right.
And Saddleback has been a real leader in that regard. And we started doing that with Irvine Valley College a little bit, but Todd has been a really good ally in that. And so his departure is a real loss, I think, for education in South Orange County.
But that campus has been exploding and growing. They're building over there. They're busting at the seams with the students, that's my understanding.
That is correct, both at Saddleback and at Irvine Valley College. I mean, it's a great value. Community colleges are the unsung hero of public education in California.
Yeah.
Well,
and they're going to become that much more important.
Well, I think that Encore Careers component, too, I mean, it's really fascinating. I was sent an article in preparation for the show that literally was AARP asking, the headline was, "Ready for your second career."
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Making a difference in the world and earning money at the same time. And so if you think about, and we've talked about this on the show, you know, this wealth of knowledge, this spirit of giving, all of this stuff. I mean, I can think of nonprofits, but now you got, you know, nonprofit management, you got other focuses that could start developing, because now you got this population that not only has the willingness, but also has the time.
And has the need
and the seasoning. Right. Well, the need because of the economic reality, right?
Right.
But the need and the seasoning. I jokingly, for the last 10 years, have said my course of retirement would be to be an executive director on a nonprofit. Okay? Making a nice living and basically doing good for my community. That would be a way I can think of basically just riding into the sunset at some point. Mm-hmm. My wife actually this morning asked me, she said, well, would you, because we're talking about going and seeing a retirement financial planner. She's like, well, do you see yourself retiring at a certain point? I said no, and she said, "Well, would that be because of the economic need, or because of the, you know, like a, because
desire.
You enjoy your passion for what you do?" And I said, "Probably a little bit on the economic, but more so because of the passion of what I do." I said, "I don't know that it would be exactly what I'm doing today, and I'm 51, right? And I'm already in my mindset looking forward to what else does life have to give me, and what other education? And I think right now in my life, probably as a student, I'm probably more honed into being a student if I go take classes and actually delivering and doing that coursework than when I was younger and it was just an arduous thing I needed to get through so I can get a degree.
So many insights come out of this show, and of course they all come back to my life here because I'm the baby.
Yes, because John, if you did not know, I know you probably have listened to a couple of these shows, but just to let you know, this is really not the Rad Life.
No.
This is Paul Roberts' therapy session.
This is my therapy session where I get to work through issues here of being an aging baby boomer.
Is there a couch there? Is that how it is?
No, there is no casting couch in this studio.
And the two things that struck me out of what Rad said, first of all, I agree 100%, but Rad said from time to time that were it not for the baby boom, he and his generation right behind us wouldn't have felt so free to try all these things that they tried. We broke the mold. We allowed
baby boomers basically made it possible for us to take it for granted that it is a reality, that it's achievable to do these things. They were the ones who said, no, I'm not doing it this way. I'm going against the grain and following my own
path. Not going to follow my father's footsteps. I'm going to do it my own way, which follow my own drum beat here.
John is younger than me, so, you know, he basically also benefits from me continuing to carry
it. You can both thank me later, but that's all right. But the point is, here's what I heard Rod say. He takes it for granted now that there's going to be an encore career. I didn't when I was 50. I really wasn't sure.
And think about your father.
Oh, right? My father was lucky if he lived to 60, he thought. Now, he lived to be 90, but those were bonus years. That was the bonus round. I wasn't prepared, and I'm still not really that prepared for the bonus round, either financially or mentally. What do I do for the next 30? Lucky me, I'm going to be the first generation to live into our 90s, for most of us.
He's being sarcastic.
What am I going to do with those 30 years?
Right, and you've told me that as you gotten older, your risk factor, you're now risk averse,
yeah.
Right?
Oh my goodness! When I was 20, I'd try anything. I'd just drop out of school and go hitchhike across the country.
And I told you, don't be worried about that because your generation, by virtue of what they have done, have never acted from the position of planning. They have acted from a position of innovation because of necessity. And so you'll face that same situation
at this point
in your life, and you'll figure it out, and you'll look back and you'll laugh because you, again, did it your way.
We did it our way. So I think there's something to that. And what you're getting at, both of you, I never thought about this. This idea where education suddenly comes back into my life. I graduated in the 70s, guys, from college. That long time ago, and all of a sudden I could see myself going back either as a teacher or instructor or something like that to give back, or to be a student again and to learn about skills that I don't have anymore, virtual reality or something else or whatever.
You could do both.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, John. I think that is also that one sort of golden opportunity possibly here where you have within that educational environment multi-generations, and you have the benefit of these people. I mean, we saw some of that in business school where you had people that had worked for 20 years and now basically are bringing the wealth and knowledge of working in industry and manufacturing, and now that they're sitting in the classroom as students, you as a person who didn't have a clue were benefiting from that sharing. I think this is a perfect situation here where, and community colleges may be that
catalyst.
But it might be that balance where it's not such a full-on educational pursuit that this is where I get to fulfill and expand what I want to do, because for the first time in my life, yes, I'm doing it because there's a financial benefit to me, mm-hmm. but there's also a big part of it that I'm pursuing the path because I want to versus it's the path that's going to kind of guarantee my future and my ability to put food on the table and buy a house.
Well, what a radically different classroom that is. I remember I went to...
Exactly my point.
I went to law school after college. I went right to law school and hated it only last year.
Yeah, he's one of you people, John.
I went for a year. William & Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. And good school.
Oh, my God. You went to William & Mary?
Yeah, I went to William
& Mary.
Wow. Well, I spent 1 year there, and we had one student in our first-year law class, one student that wasn't my age, that wasn't in their, around 20. It was a guy. We all shunned him. I don't even know what his name was. I knew nothing about him, but he looked like the professors. You know, he was probably, to us, really old. He's probably in his 40s or 50s or something. And for some reason, he decided to go back and get a degree. Nobody asked him into the study groups. Everybody kind of sneered at him and wondered what the heck he was doing here. And I never knew. Hopefully he made it and got through it. But today you're saying that might be the norm where you have multi-generate. You have grandma there just because it wants to be have fun. You have Rod there who's shifting careers at 50. And you have the normal kids that just came out of high school.
Well, I would suggest that's becoming more of a trend. It's interesting you hear that story because when I went to law school the first year, there were two gentlemen that were in their 50s. One was a college professor looking for a new career. And another was, I forget what he was, but he went back to law school for a second career as well.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to do something completely different. You got to wonder what's the demographics of the student population coming to law school today.
Yeah, right.
See a continuation of the trend.
There was an article in Inc. magazine that basically titled, "You're Never Too Old for Business School." And it talked about the story, an inspiring story of one 62-year-old's second act. Okay, it's really interesting when you start thinking about this thing beyond the kids going to school,
mm-hmm.
and look at the population and basically a hunger for education and knowledge expansion. What can we as communities do? And in certain places, because of the shift in demographics,
mm-hmm.
how agile are these institutions that are in place to actually take advantage and benefit, and very importantly, truly be of service in the mission that they say they are. When I hear about an educational, a unified school district,
mm-hmm.
okay, in 20 years from now, that unified school district may have an equal population of people that are older and people that are younger.
Yeah, so in their classroom.
And yet, and yet the question is, are we going to be able to seize those opportunities or are we not? Is there going to be that wasteland between community college and K-12 that John was talking about?
So it's saying that there have to be more, like what you're saying, Dr. Burnett started, and what you're advocating as well, more coordination between these two ends of the spectrum, where it isn't just you go through K-12, you graduate, goodbye, we never see you again, and then all of a sudden we see you again at 50, but you're in a different entity called the community college district.
Yeah, I think that's the trend. And I also, you're going to see more coordination with the community colleges and the K-12s, but you're also going to see with the community colleges and the four-year institutions. Mm-hmm. I know at Irvine Valley College, they're working in programs where if you can't get UC Irvine, you go to IVC, you take those certain courses, you maintain your GPA, and if you maintain all that, then you're automatically admitted into UC Irvine and you graduate.
Mm-hmm. So, John, we're gonna have to wrap up here really quick, but I want you to take a minute, because I know there's something going on that is taking place at the Capistrano Unified School District, which is sort of touching on this. What happens to that big bond that's being proposed right now of environment? I mean, Paul, you live there.
And a couple of the people who've been in here, including, I think, Frank Urey from Mission Viejo, have come out famously against this big bond. He's a councilman in Mission Viejo and a couple others. So
But then the question and to you, Paul, because you were there, did they offer alternatives to how to basically maintain the facilities?
Here's one of those classic instances. I'll give you an extra couple minutes to answer this. We'll go over a couple minutes because I think this is really important. I didn't even know there was a bond being proposed. I don't know what it's for. When I heard the number, it's big. And all of that is easy to say, well, I'm against all of that. But am I just an old fart who's had his time there and my children have graduated and now I don't care about what comes behind me? I don't know. I don't know enough about any of this. But it really, I think it's one of those issues that needs to be discussed. We should spend more than the next few minutes talking about it. But I'll give
you
a couple
minutes. We can have some other people as well as John back on that particular issue.
But I don't know anything about it.
It is, but you know, Paul, it's such a contentious situation. Yeah. I have my own personal feelings one way or the other on this. Neither side really is going to like my opinion, but it is something that's very contentious. I did not want to lose the focus on this show that we are in a shifting situation, right, in a paradigm shift when it comes to education. Who do we deliver it to? How do we deliver it? What vehicles and venues do we deliver it through? I wanted to just put that out there for people to digest and start thinking about.
That was very interesting, right, and you really touched me on that. I hadn't thought enough about that.
So So answer the question that Paul asked, if you can, John, here, relevant to this particular bond situation.
What is it, and what's it for, and why are some people against it? I mean, because Frank here has been pretty popular as a Mission Viejo mayor and a councilman, and he's been in the show many, many times. I tend to respect what he's saying across the board and a couple of people like that. But at the other hand, you know, am I just being an old fogey who not looking at it from the right perspective anymore here?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, you touched upon the number. It's a bond, Measure M, on the ballot this November for authorization of $889 million bond to upgrade all of our facilities across all school campuses across Capistrano Unified. That's about 60-plus facilities what we're talking about.
Okay.
So the number in itself is a large number, no ands, ifs, or buts. But in terms of bond encumbrance per property, you're talking $43 per year per $100,000 assessed value per property. And this is designed to address all of our known needs for all of our schools today. You know, other school districts, they do a portion of it. They just go back for bonds over and over again. This is designed to do all of our issues that we know about now.
And was there an assessment done, or how did they come out?
We spent several million dollars doing an assessment back in 2009, and we've updated over the years and kept it continuous, and we've most recently done it. The reason the board decided to move forward by putting this on the ballot before the voters this year is because the state of California also has a $9 billion school facilities bond at the state level, and it's projected to be passed. And ironically, it's been endorsed by both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. So there's no opposition to this bond. And this is where the state, again, goes back to financing for schools, is that in terms of building facilities or upgrading or modernizing it, the school district pays for half. If the school district puts up their half, the state will match that. But the state currently has no money, so if this $9 billion bond passes, the state will have all this money to match all of a sudden. So Capistrano Unified is in line to receive about $230, $250 million matching from the state.
Mm.
And if they don't have the funds to match up...
You only get the money if you have matching funds, right?
Exactly. They're going to miss the boat. So that $230 million is all of a sudden going to go to LA Unified or some other large school district.
Mm.
And so we as residents in Capistrano Unified are going to be paying that tax at the state level, but we're not going to receive any benefits for it. So the thought process is, let's keep the money here. Let's use it for our students. Let's keep it local.
And the only option, only again, I'm not well versed in this, but for the little quick reading I did am I wrong? I think Frank Urie is one of the people that came out against it.
Correct.
There were one or two other council people. I think somebody from San Juan Capistrano or somebody, maybe. But anyway, and their only argument I read that I retained was it's a broad bond, and where's the money going to get spent? There wasn't a plan in place of how it was going to... People didn't know how the money... It was like they're going to give the money, and then it's the district decides how to utilize the money. Is that unfair?
Well, you know, that was my criticism of the bond was staff was discussing it, and OC Tax actually had the same criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And OC, we went back, the staff went back and brought back in a specific detailed list by campus how the money is going to be spent, such that it meets the neutral criteria set forth by OC Tax that they want to see in any bond. So it meets mm-hmm. their criteria, and OC Tax actually issued a statement to that effect, affirming that we met their criteria. And because OC Tax is neutral on this, and they felt that there was sufficient specificity, the board voted 6-1 to put it on the ballot.
Okay.
So I know Frank. I respect him. I disagree with him. I was initially of his mindset, but if OC Tax is saying it has sufficient specificity, good enough for me.
Well, and here's where I go back to going almost full circle to where we started, okay? You're going to basically mudsling, say no, whatever it is, and it may be very well justified, but my expectations as a voter this day and age and living in that district, I don't have my own kid, I don't have kids, we're trying, but for me to look at people...
I'll give you a few hints on how to do it.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, really? I'm going to get a chuckle from John, too, on
you,
that one?
Okay. If you need any pointers, right, son, right, I'll help
can
you.
Can I finish my thought here? My God, it's my show, damn it. Okay. So what I would like to see is people not just saying no.
Yes.
I mean, I'm kind of tired of Congress saying no to everything. I'm tired of local politicians. All they feel that they're responsible to do is to stop and deflect and say no. If you're going to say no, if you did that in business, boys and girls...
Nothing
to
happen.
If you did that in business, you would be fired. If all you did in business, in a management position and higher, is to basically say no to something being proposed, okay, let me be very clear, you would be fired. You'd be out in the unemployment lines, okay? The only friggin' job on the planet that lets you get away with that is a friggin' politician.
Well, because you never lose by saying no. Nobody ever comes back and says, you voted against that? But if you vote for something and it turns out to be a boondoggle,
grow a pair of you know what, okay, and stand up and actually take a position. At the very least, for the benefit of those that you say you serve, offer an alternative.
Yes.
If you're going to say no to the bond, for example, then offer an alternative. Ironically, it's the same people who are saying no to the bond are the same people that for the last 8 years have been basically complaining about the facilities not being up to snuff.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And they're the same people that are saying no to taxes at the same time that they want facilities upgraded. And when you ask them, when you really just cut down to it about the bond, okay, that they're saying no to, they'll never admit it during an election period, especially in South County, but they are basically okay with higher taxes to a bond. What they're not okay with is for it to be administered by people that are not their side of the aisle being in those seats.
Maybe. I'll give you a different take.
I was told that by people who were telling me no to the bond.
I don't doubt there's some of that.
I said, give me an alternative. And they said, well, we'd be okay with a smaller bond.
Uh-huh.
And you know, okay, so here's the thing. Please, 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 for the benefit of your voters, okay, if you really want to get our attention, if you really want to get our support, don't just say no. Offer me an alternative.
Tell me what you're going to do. Well, that's the same argument against, Obamacare, whether you're for it or against it. One side says, I'm for it, and the other side says, repeal it and replace it. And then they always say, well, with what? Well, we'll figure that out later. First, we've got to repeal
it. Yeah, it requires work. And you actually have to work in your position to come up with an alternative.
Here's another take on it, that from an aging baby boomer perspective here, that I really have to take a hard look at myself and answer. When my daughter was going through K through 12, I would have voted for any bond. You want to improve the schools, throw more money at it? I'm for it. Absolutely. I want the best funded, the best paid teachers, the best facilities money can find. Now that my daughter is gone, she's 25, so it's been, what is it, 6-7 years since she graduated from high school, more I find myself saying, do we really need that? Do we really need to spend more money in those schools? Do I really want to spend more money in those schools? And Joel Kotkin, who's very well written and respected, I think he teaches at some university or at USC or someplace, and writes a lot in the Register and other places on public policy. He said, an article, I've tried to find it somewhere here, the baby boom may be the most, turn out to be the most selfish generation of all. We got ours, the heck with everybody. I got my house and my taxes are locked in. Screw everybody else. My kid went through the best school. I really do think it was the best education money could buy. I have nothing but fantastic things to say about the education she got there. But now, I'm not so worried about the next generation getting educated. I'm not so worried about who's behind me. Is that, I hate to say it, but sometimes I kind of think that way on some level. Is that, I think that's an underlying problem girding this whole thing. We got this old aging population.
That we're not admitting,
even right. to ourselves. Do you see any of that?
There is an element of that. And one thing we discussed in the bond was carving out the 55 and over communities. But the board has collectively decided against doing that because this is a recognized concern. But the thought was rising tide raises all ships. Mm-hmm. They brought forth academic.
It also brings in more money.
That schools that actually invest, you know, districts that invest in their schools and provide improved education, it increases the property value. And the example they always keep referring back to was Irvine. Yeah. They have tremendous bond indebtedness, but they keep voting it in to keep paying it. But Irvine Unified School District is so highly regarded, and look at the impact you're having on property values in Irvine. Mm-hmm. Now, when they're building out El Toro, there was a discussion, well, is this land going to be Irvine Unified or Saddleback Valley? And the developers all wanted Irvine Unified because there was a $50,000-$60,000
difference. Premium attached to that name, yeah.
Just for the lot.
Wow.
Based on which school district it was.
But, you know, that assumes, though, that, and that was to Rod's earlier point, that assumes that the cycle of life continues as it has in past generations, which is I get older, I move out of the county, and I go somewhere else to retirement.
Remember, millennials are a bigger population in numbers than boomers.
Absolutely. So, but my point is, in the old days, in the traditional paradigm, as people age, they didn't age in place. They eventually moved out and moved on somewhere else.
The irony is, those were the people that were moving to the desert, not the young people that can't afford to live here are moving to the desert.
And I'm not so sure that paradigm hasn't been delayed or broken altogether, because my group, I'm in my 60s now, I don't plan on leaving my house for another 10 years at least, God willing. And that means it's not open to that young couple who would come in and benefit from that great school district.
So the difference between Irvine, for example, and other places.
I live in Rancho Santa Margarita.
The Irvine company actually has the ability to build a lot of apartments. They have the ability to actually provide. If you look at all the constructions going on, they have around Spectrum especially.
Right.
They have the ability to provide for that demographic, okay, that is going to bring in the kids, that is going to feed into the system. But I will concur with what you were saying about the cyclical thing. And we had a gentleman here who was talking about information from the prospect of hotel industry, Glenn Hausman, okay? And he said that all the hotels are taking out their bathtubs right now. Everything is showers, okay? Taking out the bathtubs, right? Because it's boomers and nobody who uses a bathtub anymore, and it takes up real estate. I can get a couple more keys in there without a bathtub, et cetera, right? Okay. And he said something that just actually has haunted me because I didn't think about it until he said it. He says, what happens when the millennials have kids and they want to bathe them?
In the shower.
What do you do to those properties that, and it's very similar to planning for an educational infrastructure or schools or whatever. What do you do when a project for a hotel takes 5 to 7 years to get entitled and then built, but you make a decision 5 or 7 years in advance for what the square footage of every one of those classrooms, in the case of education, or guest rooms is in the case of hotels, and what is occupied in that space? When 10 years, when you open your doors, your demographics have changed.
You know what? The answer is real simple. I won't be around. I won't be running.
It's not my problem. Somebody else's.
Not my problem.
Well, on that note, I do.
How do they vote for your friend? And what's he running?
How do they find out about your campaign, John?
Yeah.
Well, I encourage them to visit my website, johnalpe.com, or visit me on Facebook. We've got great information, policy positions, and what I intend to do on the community college board.
So policy positions? Oh, that's no good.
Okay, so what are you, crazy? 2016 election
we
cycle.
We don't need
policies.
Just tell me what a bum your opponent is.
Yeah, exactly. So spell it out, please, John, yeah. And then remind people what the position is that you're basically, yeah.
Well, once again, the website is johnalpe.com, J-O-H-N-A-L-P as in Paul, A-Y.com.
Okay.
And again, the position is for the Board of Trustees for the South Orange County Community College District, which geographically is from San Clemente all the way up to North Tustin. It's the largest district within Orange County.
How many openings? How many people running?
Well, it's by area. You have to run from the area, but you run.
Didn't that change? That was a couple of years ago. It was at large. Now they changed it because they thought there were too many people living in one area.
Yeah, you're confusing that with Capistrano Unified. It used to be you live in the area, but you run large. They switched to purely by area.
Yes.
The community college district, you have to live in the area, but you still run at large.
Oh, okay. All right.
So running for one seat, there are three candidates, including myself, and there's at least one other seat available also, and I believe they have three or four candidates running for that seat.
Okay.
Thank you, John, for being on the show. I appreciate it very much. And like Paul said, I think we can plan for another show where we can maybe dive in a little bit deeper.
The community is not having. I'm not even having it with myself.
How many times have we said that about this show in the last year? This is a conversation the community is not having.
You're going to have a bunch of people come November who are going to walk in and say, a bond? For what?
Yeah.
How much? And then they're going to say, let's see, my kids graduated a long time ago. Nah.
So here's the thing, boys and girls. I keep saying boys and girls like everybody's younger. here's the thing, boys and girls. There's a reason why we call the show The Rad Life, because it is rad to talk about these things, whether they be difficult or whether they are things that you don't want to engage in. Because when we engage in stuff, as contentious as it may be, at the end of the day, on the back end of that, when we come out of it, we are better for having had the discussion.
Amen.
So I just want to also acknowledge just very quickly. Thank you, John, again, for being on the show. I want to acknowledge somebody who walked in casually.
In cargo pants.
A friend of mine who actually, yes, he must have gotten the memo to wear cargo pants just like Paul and in the same color.
And you said they're not cool anymore.
No. Well, you know, if Sammy Guarini is wearing them, then they are cool, right? So say hi, Sammy.
Yeah, hi.
Oh, let's turn Sammy up. There he goes.
Okay. Hi. Hi, Rad.
Hi. He cannot be on the show. His voice is deeper than mine. So.
Okay.
No, but I appreciate you coming by. I know you were driving down from L.A. yesterday, and you're doing some business. Sammy and I know each other from the spa industry, so we actually spent a lot of time working in Vegas last week.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. We worked real hard, didn't we, Sammy?
Oh, yeah. That was amazing working, really. This is my favorite place to work.
So I told him that he could sit in on the show. Nice to see him. We tried to get together yesterday night. So I appreciate you coming in as well. And I'll have Sammy back on because Sammy...
I'm going to let your friend go here. Thanks for being
thanks,
on the
John.
Show.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. All right. Take care.
Sammy actually is a manufacturer of some of the highest end...
Cargo pants. He makes cargo pants.
No, not cargo pants. Although he might add them now for the uniform. So next show, Sammy Guarini's booth will be all cargo pants.
That's right. Exactly.
In the Bahamas, Bermuda, you know?
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So, no, but Sammy is, in all seriousness, one of the major manufacturers of some of the most innovative and cutting-edge spa equipment that is out there. And I'm going to let him give the website information stuff here in a minute. But
we're way over, you know. I already let you go. Now you're going to go for another 20 minutes with Sammy here.
All I want to say is aging population impacts everything.
Yes.
Okay? It impacts everything, including what we talk about when it comes to wellness. People think of spas, but it's like wellness and well-being and maintenance and regimen, all this stuff. And so we all, including Sammy, touch on this topic all the time. Because that is the audience out there that we are servicing. So I'll have him back. We'll talk. We did a wellness show before. We'll have another wellness show and talk about this in the next month or so. But thanks for coming, Sammy.
Thank you for being here and a part of this amazing show.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
Paul, thank you for letting us run over. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week. You know how to get hold of me. I'm not going to bore you. Reach out and find me, and we'll see you next week. Thanks.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.